Our entire space race of the 1960s was in response to an event.
If you breathe a word of what you've seen here, we'll do time for treason.
Everything humans know of our planet, we were told, had been shared. You lied to us. You've made a grave mistake.
From now, they're gonna ask, where were you when they took over the planet?
You'll be fine, I promise.
It's over. I'm sorry, but it's over.
Your faith in us, but never in yourselves. From here, the fight will be your own.
Lucy, you show up again with that Hoochie Mama outfit, you're fired. You understand?
I was wondering which quote you're going to open with. There was so many to choose
from.
There
was so many, but that might have been the most outrageous one in this absolutely unreal movie. I know that we've said it time and time again about what is Michael Bay's most unhinged movie, what is the most unhinged movie in general. And I think this was peak Michael Bay, 2011's Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Yeah, I think we can agree that we love Michael Bay and he's great at what he does. And then this just ranks it up to like level 11, not maybe for the first half of the film, but the second half of the film is just constant non-stop action. And they've kind of dialed it back on the silly jokes a little bit from Transformers 2, but there's still a lot of weird comments in there.
Yeah, this is visual gibberish by the end. It very much felt like, okay, Michael Bay's in tune to the first Transformers, like you said. But once we get to, I guess it's called the Battle of Chicago, it's fucking insanity. And we'll cross that bridge when we get there. A couple quick things to go over. Next week, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, next week's going to be November 18th on your Twitch channel, Lucy J. Robin. Is going to be the 2-year anniversary of this podcast. We're going to celebrate with some co-op Baldur's Gate 3. You're going to go Baldur's Gate 3 on your own from the beginning to warm up.
Yeah.
And then we'll try to do a little multiplayer one, as well as maybe throw in some old school Gwent.
Yeah, where it all began. I remember when you first joined me on my stream, it was to be my Gwent coach. And yeah, that lasted all about 3 weeks. And that would have been probably like 2 years ago, probably now. So yeah, Baldur's Gate 3 though, I do want to have a quick go at it before we jump into our multiplayer one, just so I can kind of get my bearings a little bit, because I think there's a lot to do before you even get into the game.
Yeah, there is. And I remember I got the game when it first was early released, which was somehow 3 years ago.
Yeah, they had quite a long open beta, right?
Yeah, it was very long, and it was pretty much only the first, like, the prologue, and then just into the main part. I don't remember how many hours it was, because I never fully got all the way through it, but I've played that intro, where you, like, wake up from a ship or something like that.
Okay.
I played that about 4 or 5 times, but I haven't played it in probably maybe 2 years or 18 months. It was whenever they released, like, the druid character class, wherever it was. And so, yeah, it's been a long time for me. I've watched a couple videos. And I might pull that back up. I might actually some nights in the Discord, maybe just share my screen, go through that. Yeah. Maybe some people that have played it, and we'll go through the character creation, kind of go through that to kind of get a feel of it, because it's very much D&D 5e. Sounds convoluted as hell, but I think it streamlines it pretty easy for the player.
Yeah, I'm actually excited because I think it might help me get a better understanding of D&D. It's kind of the same way as I think of like online chess. Like, I don't think I could sit down and learn chess in real life, but on, you know, on the computer when it gives you hints and tells you like what you can do and tells you the rules as you go, I think I could learn it a lot better. And I sort of feel like Baldur's Gate 3 is going to be that version of D&D for me.
Yeah. So join us at that time to see us go through the madness of the co-op. Because again, I've always heard that the choices and everything are very deep detailed. Oh. So yeah, join us and see what happens. It's going to be a lot of fun. Also be on the lookout December Christmas holiday month for that coming up, holiday themed movies. And I'll go ahead and say, starting now, email us. Like, don't put it up in Discord. Don't put it public so people won't see what it is so we can read it off. But go ahead and email us. That's podonthepath@gmail.com. Your requests or nominations for our January, fuck me, it was 10 in the morning, isn't it? Wow, why did that sound like I was January? Like I couldn't hear myself in the monitor. Our January bad movie request month. Go ahead and get those in. We're going to do ones all for the main feed. So it'll be, I assume there's four, there may be actually five.
Yeah.
Like Fridays that come out in that. But they're on the main feed. If you're a patron on the Patreon, we'll have a special one for that with patrons only. So you get like a double nominees. Get those in with the short reasoning why you're choosing it and why you want us to sit through your bad movie.
Yeah, I'm excited to see those. I need to check the email address. It's actually been a few days, maybe a week since I checked it. So there might be some in there already.
I have alerts on now. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Anyway, I put it in my inbox, my Gmail inbox to get alerts. So yeah, let us know. Let us know the reasonings there. I don't think anything will be as bad as what we're watching today, or just as insane. Maybe so. I guess a bad comedy will always be worse than something like this. But yeah, get those in. Also, check out, if you want more of us, again, patreon.com/onthepath. We just did a live Watchmentary, a watch-along of The Wicker Man. It was nuts in a very different way, a bad movie than this one. Yeah. I would say, you know, it's Nicolas Cage in there. We are doing this. We should say we are doing this because we got on Little Malkovich run after Con Air last
year. Yeah,
week.
So we went on a Nick Cage run from Wicker Man to Con Air. Then we found John Malkovich in Con Air and thought, hold on, what else is John Malkovich in? Transformers 3. We need to finish off that little trilogy. And here we are. It's all John Malkovich's fault.
Yeah, how can he be more over the top in that movie? Oh, wait, yeah, he was in this movie. The highlight. So check us out there, the Discord, all the links below. Let's get into it. 2011's Transformers Dark of the Moon. And as always, we're starting off with your guess, and listeners can guess as well, of the box office gross. So this was budgeted at $195 million, which was stunning to me because I can't believe this was under $200 million.
Yeah.
But what do you think this grossed worldwide, according to Wikipedia link? Okay, good. It was linked to Box Office Mojo.
I have no idea, but I imagine it did well. Even though Revenge of the Fallen was so bad and really widely hated, I think Dark of the Moon will have done well still. I'm going to say like 400 mil.
Okay, so
am I very ambitious?
No, you're way under. Way
really?
Under. These movies,
I'm so shit at this.
These movies were nuts. It's one thing when I was a kid, I was always obsessed with numbers, mainly coming from baseball. Like growing up with baseball, you're obsessed with stats and numbers, history, dates, and all that. So I've always paid attention to like budget box office. I've always been decent at that. And I actually did remember that all of these movies grossed over $1 billion.
Oh, Michael Bay is going to be upset with me for that one.
Yeah, this grossed $1.1 billion.
I think that's the first movie we've done that has gone over $1 billion. I don't recall you ever saying $1 billion before.
The previous Transformers movies.
But I don't think we did the box office thing then, did we?
We probably didn't, but Revenge of the Fallen was $800 million.
Okay.
And then Transformers was $700 million.
Oh, so weird this is the best one.
Yeah, it's weird because it kind of ended. I mean, for good reason, it ended like this kind of run. They would reboot this with Marky Marks and Age of Extinction, which was $1.1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so, and then if I can find Last Night on here, I mean, sorry, not with Last Night, No, wait. Last night was 600 million. So that was way under.
Okay. Yeah.
That was way under there. So
I think that was the one that they filmed in Newcastle.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I sent the photo of when I went to see them filming, remember?
Yeah, that's right. You did.
It was a long time ago. That was probably like at least 7 years ago.
Yeah, Last Night came out in 17, so they would have filmed it at that time. We've already kind of gone over it before. Michael Bay, you know, we talked about, I swear we talked about him. We've done some Michael Bay movie before.
Yeah, all the Transformers.
Yeah, but like, did we? Oh, that's right. We didn't talk about the box office then, but we talked about like all that. Yes, we talked about Michael Bay, done all that. Who wrote this piece of shit?
Aaron Kruger?
There you go. Aaron Kruger, who was also known for writing. Oh, my God. He wrote Arlington Road in 1999. Legit one of the first movies that I knew nothing about going into it. But being from Arlington, Texas, I was like, hey, a rated R movie in 1999. I'll drag my mom to go see it. So I can go see it. Arlington Road. The only thing I'll say about it is it's Jeff Bridges, Tim Robbins, Joan Cusack. Hello, Cusack again. It's about Jeff Bridges plays a like anti-terrorist or whatever you want to call it, or a terrorism professor. And that's all I want to say about it. Go into that movie blind. I truly think it'll be a treasure like to go see. I was stunned by what happened. Had one of, I didn't even want to say anymore. Don't even want to say anymore.
Okay.
If anybody's seen that movie or watches it, please let me know. I'll be interested in hearing about it. But because I'm going to try not to cuss in this, okay? Oh. It's Sunday morning, even though we are technically drinking because I put some Baileys in coffee because
yes,
you are.
I never drink when we record the podcast because it's usually. Yeah, but usually you've just finished work when we usually record, whereas I'm about to go to bed. So I usually have a cup of tea or water. But today it's Sunday evening. I've been editing all day. So I'm like, I'm going to have a cider. I've got a strawberry and apple cider. And Brett was like, oh, well, I have to drink too if you're going to drink.
But I had coffee poured.
Put Baileys in your coffee. Love
I had
it.
Coffee poured. And I was like, you know what? I'll throw in some Baileys. That cider is so good.
This one?
Yeah, the old Mout.
Did you have this one when you were here?
Oh, yeah.
Old
like,
Mout.
I was looking
Love
for it.
It.
Old Mout. Yeah, it's excellent. Excellent cider.
You don't have it there?
I'm sure we do, but I only buy
it. You haven't seen it?
No, because usually I just will mix vodka in something else. Or like yesterday, I got some of those Topo Chico margarita seltzers, which are, whew, it was dangerous in there.
I miss a Texas margarita.
Texas margs, yeah. They good. Margarita season is almost over, though.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm not going to try to cuss today. I'm going to be chill. I'm not going to go crazy in there like I've gone in the past. You know, it's the Lord's Day.
It is.
10:30 a.m. here. So let's get going here and see how long that proclamation lasts. I did start out, because it's a Michael Bay movie, I had two running counters that, as usual, I kind of forgot about by the end. I had the casual racism counter, which I had up to four. I'm sure there was more, but I had up to four pretty quick. And then I had the misogyny slash homophobic counter, which I had to three.
Yeah.
And before I kind of lost on that. So that might actually be pretty good for Michael Bay. If this truly was in the 90s, this would be, you know, probably pushing like a dozen each.
Yes. I was going to say this is like, what year was it? 2011?
2011.
If it had been in the 90s, it would have been off the charts.
And I count Bad Boys 2, although being released in 2003, it was very much like, that was peak Michael Bay. I think I've said that before.
Yes.
That's where he peaked. This is where he is so clearly on the downslope of just having nobody tell him no. And it's like he has to burn through all of that money somehow.
Yeah, it kind of feels like what a child would make in a film if it had nobody telling him what to do. It's just constant action, cars, things blowing up. All the only women in the film just look great all the time, even though it's a literal apocalypse happening.
it's a 15-year-old boy. If we thought the camera being up Megan Fox's butts, he almost said the biblical for donkey, which I don't know if that would have counted or not. But if you thought the camera was like violating her, wait till he gets his new toy to play with. All right, so we start the movie. Why are we getting another voiceover? Haven't we already had two of this, hearing the backstory? And we know what happened.
Backstory.
But we knew there was a war, and we knew they left, and we knew they got stranded. Now they're telling us something about these Pillars of Eternity, or whatever they're called. They gave up the matrix of leadership in the second one, and I'm already getting like hot and bothered. I'm already, my blood pressure's already rising.
I love it because every time one of these films starts, you get a prologue, which is from way back when on Earth. So in Transformers 2, it's, I can't remember how long in the past it is, but they're in Egypt. And in this one, it's 1961, I think. And it's all about the moon landing. It's absolutely insane. I think the way that Michael Bay and the writers weave the Transformers lore into real life history is absolutely insane, but I kind of love it.
It to me is almost, at what point is this borderline offensive towards, but okay, so he's like, all right, get me SecDef right away. And then we get Era. This is John F. Kennedy. Get me Bobby. Like this ridiculous JFK. We get name drops. Robert McNamara, who is the SecDef, I believe it. He is the architect
of
the Vietnam War. He is somebody who has the blood of millions on his hands. He should be remembered as an absolute, I call myself down there, absolute monster. Bobby Kennedy, RFK, who at the time I believe was the Attorney General of the United States, and his brother, who would be assassinated, and his brother, the John F. Kennedy, who did call for landing on the moon by the end of the decade, which according to Transformers lore, is because something landed there. A guy, I caught myself again. A robot landed there, and this is what the space race for landing on the moon was about. And I guess somehow the Soviets just happened to be doing it before.
Yeah, it's brilliant. He's like, you need to get there before the Russians, and it's all because a Transformers up there.
Like, were they afraid? And again, I'm going to be dropping capitalism all the time. I blame the movie, all right? You're talking about the Soviet space race. Were they worried that they were going to turn these robots communist and socialist? Was that the biggest threat? The era, we have to get to the moon before these communists get there.
Give the robot communists.
The robot, they're going to turn it in their favor. And now I just have Comrade Optimus Prime in my fanfic. Of him just sort of Sam Witwicky is like, we must seize the means of production.
I just love the way they have like the really classic, you know, one small step for man, and then it cuts. He's like, okay, the rest of the world isn't listening anymore. Now you've got 20 minutes, Neil. And they keep name dropping, Neil, 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 go and search this big wreckage. And he goes, there's a big giant metal face.
Yes. And I don't remember, I forgot to actually look this up, if there was actually a 15 minutes or so where they did lose contact and that's how they weave this in. I do know that there was no contingency plan for if they could not get the Apollo 11 back. Like if it landed on the moon and they realized they couldn't get it back, the plan was they were going to literally cut contact. Like that was the actual plan. And they have actually, you can go look up like Nixon's speech for if disaster happened, where he says, you know, my fellow Americans, the worst thing, blah, 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 blah. But they literally were just going to cut contact and not.
And you just fend for yourself.
And just be like, all right, they're gone. And then they
move on.
Then they move on. It's just, wow, that is harsh.
That is ruthless.
That's the 60s, man. You had to be there.
Shit. Oh, my goodness. Well, thankfully, they got home.
Thankfully, they did. And apparently, well, in this timeline, in this multiverse.
In this universe.
Well, luckily, they got home, but bad for Chicago, I guess, for eventually what happens there.
Yeah, however many years later.
Butterfly effect. All right. Walter Cronkite, you too? Walter Cronkite. I cannot speak. And Walter Cronkite is the broadcaster, most trusted man in America. He's the one that a real life person playing himself. Oh, yeah. The guy being like, you know, the guy with the mustache talking like this over the black and white news. Biggest thing him was like Vietnam.
Wow.
When Vietnam started to waver and started to turn, it was him being like, I don't believe, like saying, losing trust in it. And we're like, oh, my God, if you've lost Cronkite, you've lost America.
Oh, shit. And he's in the film, too.
He's the one in there. So, but it's not the most egregious name drop, because when I talked about it being offensive, it's one thing if you're doing people who are all dead, but a real life astronaut is going to show up. Okay, we'll get there. Okay. Hello, Mel Gaze.
Yeah.
As we are just right on the soon-to-be introduced Rosie Huntington-Whiteley as Carly, and it's just following her ass.
All the way up the stairs.
All the way up the stairs. We get her cute little tiptoe. She's walking like she's on the stage. And I'm like, man, Michael Bay, you might have lost Megan Fox. You might have fired Megan Fox. But you may have found your new muse to violate on camera.
Yeah. So this is Rosie Huntington-Whiteley's first film. And she would have met Michael Bay because Michael Bay directed a lot of Victoria's Secret's commercials. And they are equally as insane as any Michael Bay film. They're just so over the top and crazy. And I imagine that's where they met. And he would have thought, yep, you're better than Megan Fox.
Yeah. And I'm sure, again, if you're into Michael Bay like we are, you know that he started off as music videos.
Yeah.
Which would have been very over the top. And then he got Bad Boys. And then that led into everything that came out of it over the next 20 years. But yeah, we'll get to that when the funny lines of the parents, when he says, yeah, me and Carly might have broken up. The parents are like, oh my God, you went from a 10 to a 10 and a half or something like that. You can't go a third time.
Yeah, you're going to have to lock it down. Which
would make sense why at the end of this movie they get back together and then this is going to be it for Shia LaBeouf. He's done after this movie. Rosie Huntington-Whiteley only ends up doing one other movie to this date, and that was Mad Max Fury Road.
Like, yeah, weird.
That's so weird to get in that and do that. I still haven't seen that movie.
No, yeah. I haven't either, actually.
Yeah, okay. But at the same time, it's like, she's not going to come back. She did one movie. She liked it, but she doesn't want to be an actress. You know, it took 9 months of her life. She's a model. She's at the time with Jason Statham. She gets to live through that and have that Hollywood life. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't upgrade. We went from Megan Fox to her. Like, if you can only upgrade from Megan Fox, it's probably her. We can't upgrade from her. So we're just going to write out Shia LaBeouf and this Witwicky character.
Yeah, we can't have them go through any sort of relationship turmoil. They have to stick together.
They have to stick together. And where do you go? Because literally, and again, I know you get in trouble for like talking about women's looks and all that. She looks like she was curated from a Victoria's Secret test tube. She is everything that you would want in a literal lingerie model, like cultivated from it. And it's to the point that she's almost one of those people where she's too good looking and she's so gorgeous that it's like she's almost not real.
Yeah, she's. And again, I say this all the time about American action films. Her accent sticks out like a sore thumb. And, you know, when she's like comes in, does anyone want to tell me what's going on? I'm like, I don't like it. I don't like it.
I wonder if she tried an American accent and they were like, okay, she can't do we'll make her part of the British embassy that gets with them. But yeah, you're right, there's no British accents. These are so American movies, where I think only in the second one they kind of convey with those Brits at that one base camp where it's a joint US British base camp, which didn't we mention in that episode that her brother was probably there getting killed at that time?
Probably, yeah, because her brother died in whatever. She doesn't specify what he died in, but you can see from the picture he was in the military and they've got his medals. So he obviously died in some kind of military excursion.
Yeah, and when she shows up with Frances McDormand, soon to come up, and for good reason, she's like, who the hell is this chick?
Yeah.
And then Josh Duhamel is just like, oh, she's military family. I can vouch for her. And I was like, hey, that's us, right? We're both military family.
Me?
Isn't your dad? Wasn't he military?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're military family.
So we can go and see the Transformers.
There you go. Nice. And it was only her brother. Ours were our parents. Our dads were in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can go and join Nest.
Yeah, we can join up and just do whatever and just be like, yo. That's what I do when I go.
Josh Duhamel vouches for us.
Yeah, if Josh Duhamel vouches, we'll get the little handwritten thing from him. But yeah, when I go to places for veteran discounts, I'm like, my dad is a Vietnam vet. Does that count? No, I really don't do that. I may have done that. This may have been on the brink of stolen valor. When I worked at Best Buy in college, there was a Quiznos, which RIP Quiznos. I think those are all gone, a sandwich shop. Okay. And I went in and it had a 10% discount with military ID. It didn't say veteran. It just said military ID. And I had one because up until you're 25, you kind of stay on benefits and I could go out. So I asked them, I was like, I wasn't in anything, but I have this ID. Does this count? And that guy was just like, I don't give a fuck. Oh, there's my cussing. But I quoted somebody. Does that count?
Yeah, yeah. No, that doesn't count. That doesn't count.
Okay, it doesn't count. He was like, I don't give a blank. And I was like, okay, good. So for every day I got a 10% military discount at Quiznos.
I think that's fine. You got to take these things where you can get them.
Yeah, I wasn't wearing, you know, a Vietnam vet hat, which would raise a lot of questions. It's like, man, how do you look so good being that young? All right, so this is Sam Witwicky, a new girl, Carly.
Well, my favorite thing about her entrance scene is something that links us back to Con Air.
Oh, I can't think of anything.
Really?
No. Okay. Hold. No. What? What is it?
Her first scene, she comes in holding something like this.
Oh, the bunny. Bunny, of course.
The bunny. Put the bunny in the box, Carly.
Oh, man. How could I not pick that up?
I'm going to get the photo. I have a photo of John Malkovich like that. I'm going to get the same one as Rosie and just put them side by side.
All right. So now I guess we have to call an audible for next week and do a stuffed bunny. What movies have stuffed bunnies in them?
I can't think of any others.
Was that Peter Rabbit movie?
Oh, yeah.
Or something. All right, get those requests in before we announce at the end of the show what we're going to do. Sam is really goddamn annoying in this, yep. Where he's so insecure and he instantly is just, I guess I could just say, showing his insecurities. He gets down, they start talking, blah, 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 but they do the flashback to where they meet. And we get another real life character, Obama. And
yep. So many presidents in these films is insane.
It is, and this is right in the middle of his presidency. He was elected in 08, which means he would have took office in January 09. This came out, what I'm assuming, is the summer of 2011. I know it's 2011, but I guess it was summer, probably May.
I think it
like
was.
That.
I remember going to see it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it had to be. And they meet, and of course, she, for whatever reason, is smitten by him. And it's just, okay, maybe because he met the president, and maybe she knows a little bit more about what he's done. And he does the finger guns at her and blows the smoke, and I'm just like, no. No.
So many times, like, I love Sam Witwicky as a character, but so many times throughout this film, I'm like, why is she going out with him? Why is she going out with him?
Yeah.
What's the reason? You can find him attractive and find him charming, but like, you're in a relationship with this man.
But he's not showing that charm. Like,
yeah, he's not.
If it's a look thing, because let's just say this, don't get me wrong. Jason Statham, very handsome dude. I idolize him. He's bald and he owns it. And he doesn't hide it. Like, that's my boy like that. They're together in real life.
Mm-hmm. They've been together for a long time.
For a long time. Before this movie. Like, that was 2010 when they got together. So it might have been, like, before they started filming this or sometime around there. Like, he's handsome in that sense. But, again, she is Victoria's Secret model. So when it comes to looks, she can be with literally anybody out there. Obviously, Jason Statham has a good personality. Maybe smart. All of that right there. That's what attraction can do. But we need to see that on screen, because in the first movie, when I actually really, I think that's what we're doing. I think we're holding over the good, not faith, not effort, good car. I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's too goddamn. Oh, I stopped myself. It's too early.
Can't say that on a Sunday.
But from that, when he's in high school and we get it the way that Megan Fox is with those bros and he's like a nerd. So I can kind of see how they would get together.
The
in
endearing
that sense.
Sort of. Thing yes, he and brings to the table, yeah.
Yes, and the shared trauma and experience of what they went through together. But for this, it's very much just, let's just have them have this stupid meet cute. It'll take 20 seconds. Okay, they're together. And get on with it.
Yeah. Like, how did they go from that meet cute to, like, being living together?
Yeah.
There must have been something in between there that went really well. Because at the moment, he's just really down on his luck. Like you said, he's really insecure. He's feeling undervalued because obviously he went from saving the world twice, can't tell anyone, and now he can't even get a job. So he's really, really down in the dumps right now.
Which that's the thing too. Like, I get that it can't be public, but I also understand how this would work. What he did the first time, after the first Transformers, they should be like, yeah, we can't get this out in the open. We have to cover it, but we're going to hook you up. With the CIA slush fund that probably has $87 billion. Actually, that's 87. That's under what it is. But there's something like there. You can hook him up with something. You can give him some kind of no-show job where he doesn't have to do anything. And he's going to collect several hundred thousand dollars a year because of what he did. And then the second movie comes around. At that point, it should be double. He should not have to worry about this. The fact that they don't do that, they either need to kill him, like wag the dog style. It's just like, are we going to take care of this guy? If we don't take care of him, he's going to talk, right? Like, he's going to do something. So you either put a fucking, God bless it. Okay, there you go. However long it lasted, there it is. Mark the time.
Just give him.
You inject him in the back of the neck and put him to sleep and his whole family, or you pay him off.
Yeah, he shouldn't have to be worrying about a job or paying rent or anything like that. He definitely should be looked after. And it's kind of awful, actually, that they abandon him after everything he did. They give him a medal. A medal?
From Obama.
From Obama. That's kind of cool. But yeah, he shouldn't be worrying about income at this point.
Yeah, that actually cost him in that office that we're mostly Republicans here. So it's like, yeah, I don't think that's legal. But speaking of abandoned and not taken care of, these two little robots at their house, one of these sounds like a soprano that threw up some gabagool into a sentient blender here. Mm-hmm. And the other one, he just kicks like it's an Irish dog.
I love these two little things. They're just awful. I don't see the point in them.
I think the point was they had to get rid of those supremely racist ones.
Oh, they did.
From the last,
yeah.
Mudflap and I don't remember the Skidmark.
It's Skidmark. Yeah.
Skidmark
awful naming as
and
well.
Mudflap. Yeah. Like,
but one of these little ones was in Transformers 2 as well, right? It was the one that Michaela kind of rehabilitates from a Decepticon.
The one that he's like humping. The one that realizes, whoa, we get to choose?
Yeah. Yeah.
An Autobot. Yeah. That's the Gabagool soprano here that's just, again, needs to be thrown in a East Jersey dumpster.
And they live outside with Michael Bay's dog.
Was that Michael Bay's dog?
I think so, yeah. Oh, he always he always posts pictures of dogs like that.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that that's one of his dogs. I'm going to say it confidently enough that you believe me.
Sure. Oh, yeah, just say it. They can't fact check that.
No.
We get to Middle East. I think I might have slammed the keyboard because I have an O semicolon semicolon E-G-G-G-G-A nuclear site. I don't think that was it. So I think I might have stroked out right there. Middle East nuclear site with Iranian flags are pulling up. Hello. Only the USA gets nuclear site, bitches.
Oh, my God.
Illegal. Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be. Middle East illegal nuclear site. And it's just.
Is it?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Because, again, it's just hilarious to me that people don't see the hypocrisy in that it's an illegal nuclear site only because we, the UN and the Western countries, say so.
Yeah.
Like, only we get nuclear weapons. You can't have nuclear power for any other flipping reason. Only we get to have it.
Is this the part where it's kind of rounding up where all the Autobots are now? Because they have kind of left Sam and they're just kind of assisting in human conflicts.
They're
now,
special,
I think it
forces.
Says, which I think, yeah,
yes.
Which I was just like, whoa, that doesn't seem right.
No, but this is also, this is almost too late, where this is what the second one should have been. This should have been 2007 when Bush was still a president and the Iraq war was still super hot. By 2011, we've had the terrible economy. At this point, I think it's calmed down in the Middle East. We didn't pull out all the troops of Baghdad in Iraq by that time, but it's very much calmed down when we've realized, oh, this is a cluster F. We can't do it. But here again, it's just, well, this is our world and Michael Bay's world. We're just going to blow these people up because they're not doing what they're told.
Yeah. And then we move on to another piece of lore that they've woven themselves into.
Yes.
Chernobyl,
which I can't say because of Hot Tub Time Machine. I have to say Chernobyl.
Chernobyl.
It's Chernobyl, which again, I about dropped my ears at that, because when I saw the Cyrillic letters in here, and it's just, oh, the Rushkies in there. You're not capitalist enough yet for us. We still have to use you as a bad guy. But yes, they're in Ukraine, because I guess whoever was writing this shitty script just went to Wikipedia and was like, where can we name it? Oh, Chernobyl. That's perfect. An abandoned place that robots can be.
Yeah. And it turns out that it wasn't just a nuclear disaster. It was actually a big transformer disaster. I can't remember the details of what it was now.
Who could possibly remember or care?
Yeah, but it was all having Michael Bay weave himself into there. And yeah, I just...
Sputnik is here.
I totally forgot about so much stuff in this film. I swear, I used to really love this film. And I found myself audibly gasping at, like, what? They put the moon landing? They put Chernobyl?
Oh, it gets so much better, especially if you know astronauts. I'm just waiting to talk about it. I'm just waiting. Yeah. Which is, Sputnik is here. The first Soviet satellites The first satellites, period, was Sputnik. That's here. But again, before I can finish howling in, I don't know, laughter or horror, some robot starts attacking. This worm robot starts tearing the place up.
Mm-hmm.
Optimus shows up. And does he have a sword and shield? Has he been watching some, like, it's a bunch of medieval? Is he in his medieval phase, medieval fantasy phase here or something?
I fucking love it. So he's got his massive, like, because he used to just be the front part of a truck, right? Now he's got a trailer. And I was like, why has he got this massive trailer? And then I remembered it transforms into his giant weapon hold.
It's his accessory.
And now he's got a sword and shield. It's just so good.
Like, it's gone. Usually you up it. Like, you go from sword and shield to guns. And man, does he have a badass, like, shotgun or whatever it is by the end of this movie. He pulls out the sword and shield. And I don't know. Is this is Shockwave? The worm?
Yes.
Okay. Because there's also a sound wave that comes up later. And I was like, I cannot be bothered to know the difference.
There's the main Decepticons you want to know are Megatron, Starscream, Shockwave.
And they're all dead by the end of the movie, right?
I don't know. I don't know who the bad guys are in the next few.
Okay. Well, I saw Megatron gets killed right with Sentinel Prime.
Yeah.
Shockwave, I think, gets... I'm pretty sure he dies. And then I read, I couldn't, again, I might have skipped through some of that while I was watching football at the end. I saw where Megatron, Starscream actually, it says he gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming this wrapped up the trilogy. You know, this is the Transformers Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. Which, kill everyone.
Which it wraps up. It's the worst one, but it can still be good. Again, the tier list. I cannot wait to hear your tier, like where you put this.
This is a real internal struggle for
me. I know. I can tell, like, already, because I think it might have been a little bit of Con Air with you. At the beginning, you're like, oh, this is going to be here. But then you watch and you're like, oh, no, this has some problems. But Con Air still went to an A for me. It was selective.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get to the interview time. So if
job search montage. Yes,
right now, it was very much, okay, we're setting all this up. Okay, we've had, you know, the goofy stuff from the robots. Now it's time to get unhinged with the humans. Aerosmith's Sweet Emotion is playing, which I love that damn song. I love it so much. I know a lot of people will say it's overplayed. I get it, especially if you're older, super overplayed. I will always think of it as the intro to Dazed and Confused when they're pulling into the parking lot and they have it. So I love that song. It's so good. Definitely my favorite Aerosmith moment.
Oh.
When the parents are talking about the jobs and all, like, meeting with the parents there, she calls them millennials the lost generation, and I'm like, let's fucking go.
I was like, excuse me.
It's like, oh, he's a millennial.
One of my favorite mom lines though is when she sees his new car, Sam's new car, and she goes, it reminds me a lot of Bumblebee if Bumblebee were a sad piece of shit.
Yes, the parents, this was the perfect amount of parents.
Yeah, we don't need them as much as we had them in Revenge of the Fallen.
They were way too much. They were good in the first one, and it was one of those, hey, they were good on screen for like 8 minutes. Let's put them on for 40. And it's like, no. That's too much. They pulled them back here just the perfect amount. That's one compliment. Mm-hmm. I will give this script.
Their story makes sense, too, in that they, you know, their kid has moved out, so they've sold their house and bought this massive, I don't know what you call it, an RV or something. And they've got matching tracksuits. It's just brilliant. And they're still just as funny as ever. But I totally agree. Having them in the film a lot less worked better.
Wait a minute. Did I miss Mojo?
Mojo's not in the film.
Did they mention the dog?
No.
Oh, no. Did that dog die in between?
Oh,
I might have to do a quick...
They had two dogs in Revenge of the Fallen.
Oh, they did, because they started humping each other.
Okay, what happened to the dogs?
Okay, I might have
to look.
Do you
know what they also didn't mention in this film?
What?
Why Bumblebee can't talk still?
That's in my notes. That's in my notes of me screaming again at the movie.
Why did they do that? So in the first one, at the very, you know, they say, oh, why can't he talk? And Ratchet's like, oh, I'm working on it. You know, it was damaged. At the end of the first film, he starts to talk. And then in the second film, he can't talk again. And they're like, oh, it's damaged again. And then this one, it just appears that Ratchet has just given up. He can't be bothered to make Bumblebee talk. So it doesn't even mention it.
Maybe because it's just so fucking funny of him doing Tom Hanks lines and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. In there. Maybe that's why. It's just so funny.
It is quite funny, isn't it?
No, it's not. Okay, a quick Google search. I can't find anything about
dogs are gone.
the dog. Okay, I don't even want to keep searching because I'm going to find out the dog died and they didn't want to replace him.
That's going to be sad.
I'm just going to say that Mojo
is in the van.
There you go. Well, then they're just neglecting him. And then we didn't get to see him. No, Mojo's good. Mojo's good. All right, let's move on to the highlight of the movie. John Malkovich. The camera just zoomed straight into him. Very odd.
Love it.
Very odd. John Malkovich is here. I'm now invested in the movie. He is so spray tanned and his teeth are so white and they never make mention of it. I don't know what that was about other than it just being a very funny look.
Yeah, he looks, you know, especially having just watched Con Air, he is obviously a lot older, but then you're right. He's so tanned. The teeth are insane. And he's saying loads of weird things like WTF to that. And he's just saying loads of really bizarre lines. And it's really weird, but I kind of just think it's brilliant.
Yeah, he's doing this is his insane mode. If Cage was starting to go nuts in 1997, Malkovich was eccentric like he played in 97, like he played Cyrus. At this point, he's full on. Let me get either a new house. Let me get a summer home. I'll sign on to Transformers. You know, give me several million dollars for coming in. He fights, or he's like play fighting a Transformer later.
Oh my God, yeah.
He's having a blast, and good for him. Get that money. And just the way he just delivers it is so mad, which impress me.
Mm-hmm. That's a great... One thing I noticed in this film is I used to listen to the soundtrack of this film and all the Transformers films quite a lot as like background noise when I was working, or, you know, it would have been school at university at the time. And Impress Me is the name of the piece of music that plays over that as well. And it's a really kind of whimsical, like, you know, like dun, 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 dun. And I love that piece of music. And as soon as he said it, I thought, oh, I need to go back and listen to this soundtrack. Because one thing they do great in this film is the soundtrack.
Okay.
The score, the music.
Okay.
I love
it. All right, we may fight about this. I'm not trying to be pedantic, but did you listen to the score or the soundtrack?
The score. Okay. I mean the score.
The score, yeah, the score is fine. I have it down multiple times, so I'll just get it out of the way now. This soundtrack is wretched with this fart rock.
Fart? What is fart rock?
Just, it's so, oh my God. Da, da, da,
okay. I can only speak for the score. I listen to the score. That's what I listen to when I work, yeah.
Yeah, the score is good, but I have it down. I can see that down there at the bottom with Ken, when Ken Jeong shows up. This soundtrack is wretched and hello, Ken Jeong. No, terrible, terrible. It's just, again, that mid, even though it's 2011, it goes back to like Twilight. It's in that same mode where it's this indie fart rock that I call it. That it's just, whatever. I don't want to get too much into that. I went off enough about Twilight about it. The indie. Oh, no, it was Jennifer's Body that really was.
It was Jennifer's Body, yeah.
Which was 2008. So,
that was hellish.
Yes, this is when I started teaching. No, I don't want to go back to that. The 2000s, just outside of hip hop and rap, that was really good. And dance music was really good at that time.
I don't even remember what music I liked then.
Yeah, that was like peak Kanye when he was, before he lost his goddamn mind.
Oop. Oh my God.
Okay, the mailroom. Oh, he talks about getting a mailroom job. Quick story about that. That is the first job that my dad got out of the military back in like 88, 89, 20 years, Vietnam vet. And because we're so nice to our veterans in this country, he just went and got a fucking minimum wage like mailroom job because there was nothing because he didn't have a college degree. Worked his way up, got all the way to human resources manager, just under human resources vice president. So he's basically second in this company. They sell the company, and then he gets rewarded with basically getting shit canned with no severance. But the vice president who loved him actually alerted him to it and fought to give him a severance. So that goes back to the next thing. This was my first, and even though I wouldn't change my political beliefs for a long time, this is my first like insight into like American business, and to me, like pure capitalism. Where this guy worked his ass off for like 10 years was the perfect American story of working your way up from the mailroom up to a white collar job, and then was going to be just shit canned with no severance at the age of like 50 something.
Yeah.
And it only
That's horrific, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I realized then it took me a long time to fully process it. Like, this is why you don't show loyalty to a company. Because I don't care what they say. Yes, there are instances there. It's the personal relationships that'll do it. That's kind of what saved him into 6 months of it.
Yeah.
But don't show loyalty to a company. Don't give them 2 weeks unless you already have something like lined up in that sense. You don't owe them anything like that, because odds are they're not going to show that shit to you when it's time to lay you off.
No. And as soon as, yeah, exactly. And as soon as you're gone, they won't, you know, mourn your loss. You'll just be replaced. It's never personal. You're just like a number.
Yes. It's all about those personal relationships. There's no relationship to a brick and mortar building.
Yep.
All right. So we get through all that. Frances McDormand shows up, which, again, yay, she is married to, I think, Joel Coen, Oscar winner, I believe, from Fargo. Unbelievable actor. She's in a ton of stuff. She got nominated, maybe 3 billboards also, multi-nominated, yep, I'm pretty sure, even though I didn't write it down. She shows up to try to lend credibility to this movie. Her character is interesting because it makes it seem like this was written for a man and they were forced to put a woman in. And then like, okay, well, we're going to make her not act like a woman, not like a woman. Don't want to be called ma'am, calling other women chicks, get really offended when people call her ma'am. And so
why is she so annoyed at that? I didn't understand that at all.
The only thing I could think of, this again, is a Michael Bay movie written by a child where they're just like, oh, say, man writing a woman. She's not like other women. She's tough nose.
She's tough. Yeah.
Yeah. We're just going to act like that. And it's like, you don't have to do it like that.
Yeah. I love her. Like, I love her so much, but I was just so confused by this character, even though I do like every time she was speaking, we're obviously supposed to be like, oh, she's ruining everything. But I was like, no, she's right. Like, she's right. You know, like what you mentioned earlier, where Sam and Carly really shouldn't be here. Carly especially shouldn't be here.
Maybe Sam, because Sam absolutely should be there. But yes, they're right. This should not be a date.
It shouldn't just be Carly shouldn't just be wandering in looking at all this stuff. And I was like, okay, I understand her point of view here. But yeah, I didn't understand why she hated being called ma'am so much. And then they had to put in that she had the previous relationship with Simmons.
Oh my God, I missed that.
Did you?
I did. That's John Turturro, right?
Yes.
I totally missed that.
So he keeps like hitting on her, and then he's like, you broke my heart. And she's like, if you ever tell anyone about that one night we had 20 years ago, I'll break your neck. And like, it's just, yeah. So that had to be thrown in. And then he kisses her at the end. Do you miss that too?
I think I did. I was so, my brain was so glazed over.
That was in the post-credits scene.
Oh my God, I missed the post-credits scene.
All it is them kissing.
Okay, well then, no, I was not going to stick around. We'll get to the abrupt ending.
Oh my God.
To where I blinked and the movie was
from
over.
That, yeah.
All right. Of all the insanity that we've had so far, this had me howling. This just had me just, my seat turned over. Actual Apollo 11 astronaut, the second man on the moon, Buzz Aldrin, who I think became a senator from like Ohio or something like that, shows up to this movie after Optimus comes up and gets mad and all that. He shows up, and this poor bastard, maybe he got paid a lot. Hopefully he held out and
he
got paid
must
a lot.
Have.
He has to sit here and read this shit, which very clearly he's reading from cue cards aimed at the visual alignment of Optimus, because he's just trying to look up in wonderment. And he's just saying, I'm like, how many takes did it take to do? Good God. I lost it at him showing up here.
From a fellow space traveler, it's an honor to meet you.
It
Optimus
is oh my God. He was on the actual moon. He punched out a guy. Go Google this video of him. God, I think it was him. I'm pretty sure it was him. It had to be him. Of somebody come up and saying the moon landing was fake. He just straight socks this dude. It's awesome.
Wow.
And he's here having to treat this goddamn robot, fellow space traveler. And then why is Optimus impressed at him? He's traveled all over. Yet Optimus has become the most Americanized, like, immigrant. It's nice to, an honor to meet
it's
you,
an honor,
sir.
The honor is mine.
He's the second man. He's not even Neil Armstrong. Go dig up his corpse and put him in here. Why not? Why not just have hologram de-aged Neil Armstrong at this point? You're fucking spitting on the graves of Robert Kennedy, JFK, Nixon. We forgot Nixon.
Yeah,
showed up also.
Yeah. How many presidents can we get in one film?
My God, it got hot. I got hot there.
But the thing is, when I first watched this, and probably the first few times I watched this, I would have had no idea that that was Buzz Aldrin, really, because I didn't know what he looked like or who, you know. I don't remember ever seeing stuff about the moon landing, really. We never learned about it or anything.
Did
like
you
that,
know
so.
That Neil Armstrong was the first one, though? Is that like common?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we know the first man on the moon. And then that's about the height of the research I've ever done. So it wouldn't have clicked to me until probably a more recent viewing that that's actually him.
I only know, if you're American, you're going to know Neil Armstrong. I do yeah. believe that most Americans of an age, young kids aren't going to know, that you would know Buzz Aldrin. But the big trivia is always the third person who had to stay in the module who didn't get to walk on there. And I'll always remember him. Because he's the name of a he shares the name with a very famous Irish nationalist.
Oh,
who,
God.
Who Liam Neeson. Why'd you say it like that?
I was just a bit out of.
Oh,
nowhere.
I thought you were like, oh, good. An Irish nationalist.
No. I said, oh, God. Like, out okay. of nowhere. Where'd that come from?
Like, Liam Neeson, I think, played him in the 90s biopic. It's also the name of a drink. No, yeah. That's Tom Collins. Sorry, that's a Tom Collins. Never mind. Michael
What's
Collins.
What's the guy's name?
Michael Collins.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't remember if he got executed by the British during the Easter Uprising or if he was killed like in battle or whatever.
I don't know.
I think he might have been. But you always remember that Michael Collins was the guy that didn't get to walk on the moon.
Yeah, what the hell? Imagine getting all the way up there.
Hey, he knew it going in, though. Like, that's whatever his payload yeah. special, some, you know, some backup thing. All right, we need to pick up the pace here because we're going way too slow and I'm going to lose it. We'll pick it up. But we get Sam goes to visit Carly at her job. We're introduced with Dylan Gould. And I think this is Grey's Anatomy. Is this McDreamy?
Yeah, I haven't seen Grey's Anatomy, but yeah, it's Patrick Dempsey, who is Heartthrob from Grey's Anatomy. Yeah.
There's a McDreamy and a McSteamy. So he shows up here and this is the whitest place I've ever seen, both in people and in actual building color.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's
Sam's,
a car collector.
The car collector. Sam's insecurity is beyond annoying. And typically, always having dated women that to me felt way out of my league, like looks wise. It's not like you want to like show him off as a trophy or something like this, but it's like, dude, you should be like, yeah, this is my fucking girlfriend. Mm-hmm. We're together. And she likes me. It's not that she gets to go home with me, something like that. But it's kind of like that sense where it's like, you're a smashing success. You're a goddamn literal lingerie-looking model. Bro, be happy that you have hit the fucking jackpot. Your mom coming up is going to be right.
Yeah, your mom's going to be very right. But yeah, I totally agree. It's awkward. And if I was her, I would have been absolutely raging at him for behaving like this in front of anyone, let alone your boss.
She's like his hype man. She's so supportive. She's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And
I actually really like their relationship when he's not being super insecure. I prefer this relationship over the Sam Michaela dynamic.
Yeah, when she defends him multiple times to mm-hmm. very powerful people.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, take it. All right, on a quick Google, Michael Collins, the astronaut, died 2 years ago.
Oh.
Why wasn't he in this movie?
That is weird.
They should have been like, oh yeah, there's Michael up in the booth up there. He doesn't get to come down and meet. That would have been funny.
Yeah. How weird.
Yeah, he lived till 90. He was born in Rome. Interesting.
Wow.
He was born in Rome in 1930. Hey, Mussolini. Like, what? Why was he born? Yeah, there. I guess it was... He was a U.S. military attaché there. Huh. No, we had military... Oh, they were fascists. Never mind. Of course we did. All right. Do-do-do-do-do. How the hell... Oh, this is what I have in here. How the hell did Sam not get this payload? How did he not get this payout from the government? But the funniest thing here was they're in the car. He can't get it started. The smash cut of him kicking the shit out of this car
so
for like
good.
10 full seconds while Patrick Dempsey is still talking to him was so funny.
Yeah, I love Shia LaBeouf and I've loved him in every Transformers film. I think he's so funny and annoying and outrageous. And that is, you know, he was trying to be subtle at first kicking the car and then he just leans into it and keeps going. And he's like, yeah, it's fine. It's just I'm about 30% through my restoration of the car. Kick, kick, kick.
Yeah, it had me rolling. And I think it's why that first one was so good. It's because he was an angsty teenager.
Yeah.
And him doing this now as an adult is not cute anymore. It's more of a man baby having a temper tantrum.
Yeah, I wonder what age he's supposed to be. He must be like early 20s. Yeah, he's just come out of college. He'd probably be like 22, 3, maybe. Yeah.
That's what it's going to be. It's right out of college. I guess he went to an Ivy League. I don't remember. Did he go to Yale? Did they say where he went?
I don't remember.
Oh, wait. It was in goddamn 2. Was that?
Yeah, I don't remember.
What was that? Was it Princeton?
I
think it was Princeton, and they didn't let them film there. Princeton didn't let them film on campus.
Oh, really?
So they had to film at another one looking like that. Megatron arrives. He's actually like conscious for the first time in any movie.
He's in Africa.
Yeah. What are with these baby robots in barrels?
That's what they were trying to do in the second film.
Yeah, but they were in like
sacks. Like he's trying to grow younglings, I guess. And we don't ever see them again.
I don't like it at all.
And it's weird that they put them in there at the start and then
they just leave them
in Africa and then go to Chicago.
The script forgot about them like we did. This robot Laserbeak just starts assassinating people. And this is where we enter a different movie. We're going to do that multiple times. In some ways, good. And a lot of ways, bad. This, again, was the first hint to me, not the hint to me, that where you could have had a really adult Transformers where it gets really fucking dark and gritty, which this movie does right here. It enters this 1970s like spy movie type. They're going around. This one becomes like a little pink robot, befriends this little girl, then starts murdering what I assume is this whole family. Definitely the guys, everyone who knows about the moon landing. Yeah. This is something that could have been very interesting.
Yeah, it got serious really quickly. And it's weird because they have, what do you call the actor's name of the guy in Sam's office?
Ken Jeong.
Yeah, so they have him, who's obviously very comedic in the way he's acting, even though he's kind of saying serious stuff. He's like, they're coming for me, you know, they're all doing this. And then they have him suicide himself, which is, I think, how they say it in the film. Yeah. And it gets really dark really quickly, but then it's shrugged off with John Malkovich being like, sister, tweeter. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, it's the tone. It's a Transformers movie. Like I said, we just went from, to me, the funniest thing where you have Sam kicking the car to this assassin robot. And yeah, the hoochie mama, the Latin meltdown. You go, see, that's a Latin meltdown. It's like, he's not Latin. Nobody's Latin. Are we just doing everything? Michael Bay was like, we have to offend other races and ethnicities. I caught a lot of flack for doing Black Americans. Let me just take aim barrels at Asians, Latin, everyone else in here and just be like, no one can say anything about that, right? And this guy. Yeah, what movie did I end up in where right after we have this assassination robot, we get this dude telling this 22-year-old white guy, hey, if you show up dressed like a hoochie mama, you're fired. What?
I know.
Did the editor have a stroke and cut the wrong thing? Was he talking to the wrong character?
I know. It's just all over the place. But one of my favorite John Malkovich moments is when he catches Sam and the guy in the cubicle together in the toilet. And it's just so stupid. And he just starts squaring up to John Malkovich like, huh? You gonna say anything?
what are you looking at?
Is that your boss?
He's like the boss of...
It looks like
he's the boss of the whole company. It seems like, if not, at least this whole wing of the company. And yeah, he backs down pretty quick. So Malkovich, he loses. God, it's so dumb. The staring contest. Oh, guess I win. Ken Jeong. If people are saying, where do I recognize this guy from? It's everything. Everything.
Yeah, he's in so much.
The Hangover is the biggest one. That was his big break.
Yeah.
I think he's on The Masked Singer now. So if you see those commercials or watch that. God love you, but he's in there and he is just going an 11 out of 10, even for him, like the way he's drinking this milk. It's so awkward, which didn't work. What did work to me was when he was right up against this woman making copies and it looks like he's going to, it looks like he's going to sniff her in a creepy way, which wouldn't, because again, all the women are fucking fitness models or like porn star looking people here. Mm-hmm. And he just turns and she turns around and I'm like, oh, it's going to be something like that. And he's just like, I'm next. And then she walks away. I'm like, OK, that got me. That flipped
it
on me.
Funny. Yeah. It was good. But yeah, he doesn't last very long.
No, he doesn't. He gets, again, very uncomfortably suicided. And the robot says that. And OK, before that, John Malkovich leering over Carly when he turns his head sideways was really funny, because he could have just done it normal, but he just turns his head at a straight 180 degrees and then turns it right back. I'm like, God damn, Malkovich.
Yeah, that one was kind of funny. We'll allow that one.
We do. We get a put down. Gaylord.
Yep. I haven't written that in capital letters.
Gaylord. I'm like, oh, again, I'm screaming again. I was screaming when Buzz Aldrin showed up. I was screaming here again. It's like the Gaylord put down. And we're back on the path, your regularly scheduled programming. All right, Laserbeak attacks. We kind of jumped all over here, but yeah, Laserbeak attacks, which is a stupid name, by the way. What the hell?
Shit name. Why?
Didn't think of that one very long.
Yeah, they didn't spend any time. They've got Megatron, Starscream, Soundwave.
Oh, yeah, I guess they all they're from there, but yeah. But like Laserbeak. Soundwave, Shockwave. It's like, damn, they really weren't trying back in the 80s, were they? And then I was about to turn the movie off because John Malkovich, I don't even know his character's name. John Malkovich gets thrown against these like bookcasing, and I'm like, no, but he's not.
Oh, you
dead
thought
yet.
He died? No,
I was
no,
like,
no, he's all
don't.
Good.
Just don't leave he's the movie. Good. Yeah. Bumblebee comes back when Sam, who should have been shot like 11 times by these soldiers.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like this where he knows that this is Nest HQ, but they're fronted as some kind of, I think it's some kind of food delivery place. And he's like, why are you packing like these guns or whatever?
Like you're very
but
much
that was one
forces.
Of my favorite moments that kind of got me like, there's a few moments where I get caught up in like the American actionness of it all. And I'm like, hoorah, I'm like, whoa. And one of the moments is where they start talking shit about Sam's car and he shouts down he grabs the guy's walkie-talkie and he's like, Bay, 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 Bay. And then they play the music. Bumblebee comes out and goes like, whoa, 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 whoa. And he goes, that's my car.
That's my car.
I was like, yes.
But I like how B comes out and he's almost like backhanded with what he has. Like, hey, get away, get away, get away.
Yeah.
What's going on? What's going on here? Yeah, Bumblebee, why can't he talk? We brought that up. So they go inside. Sentinel Prime comes back to life in Hello, Leonard Nimoy. What the hell?
Yeah. Like very very strange. Apparently he voiced another Transformer in the animated movie
Galvatron.
a long time ago. That's right. And obviously he's mostly well known for being Spock.
Yes, and there are so many Star Trek references in here.
There are.
Yeah, and there's lines that he says later. Because I saw in the trivia, this was designed, I guess it was the beard that was in there. This was designed for Sean Connery. Was offered to Sean Connery to come out of retirement. He turned it down. He has a Highlander line where there can be only one.
Oh, shit.
And they kept it in there. And it's like, why are you putting this Highlander line here for Leonard Nimoy? I think I think Optimus later on says the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
I think Sentinel says that.
Does Sentinel say it? I thought Optimus said it, and that's why it was so stupid.
Yeah, I thought Sentinel says it. I have it written down as one of Sentinel's lines, but apparently there's loads of Star Trek quotes and references in the film. Yeah. I didn't look them up because I've never watched Star Trek, so they wouldn't mean anything to me, but apparently there's loads. So maybe anyone, Star Trek fans listening, can fill us in on more of them. But yeah, that was the line that I had written down that I think Sentinel says towards the very end.
Yeah, Star Trek fans, if you're too busy not having sex, let us know. I'm kidding. That's such a stupid thing. I never got into that. I always loved Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I never watched Star Trek, you know, as a kid back in the 90s. But I always hated that the Trekkie versus Star Wars kind of things. Because they were, even though I didn't watch it, I understood they were so vastly different. And I think if I watched Star Trek, I'd actually really like it, because the big thing was like the philosophy of it. It was like a mature grown-up thing where Star Wars
very forward thinking. Yeah.
Yes, it wasn't space wizards with laser swords and blasters going pew 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 at each other.
That's one of my favorite things to do, though. If someone's like, "Oh, what did you think of Fuck, I've forgotten the name of any Star Wars film." And I'll just be like, oh, I don't really like Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Just like Empire Strikes Back. I'm not really into Star Trek.
Or if someone says they like Star Wars, I'll do the.
Yeah, just do the. Hey, you could do that real easy.
Yeah.
Dang, you can. I think my I'd like to say that my hands are so jammed up that I can't look. I don't think I can do it anymore.
What the hell?
Oh my God. I used to be able to do it, but I think I've jammed them so much. I can't.
You're
like,
not
do
a
it.
True Trekkie.
I'm not. Again, that comes from, I'm just going to blame that on playing sports and I'm doing it to be like, of course, sports. Trekkies can do it because they're not playing sports and not have. Yeah, there you go. I looked it up. You were correct. It actually was Sentinel who gave that line, which just no fuck right off movie. Putting a Spock line. God damn, this movie sucks. Okay. Now we're picking up the pace. Picking up the pace. They're debating WMDs in here, and I'm debating taking my own life. And only 51 minutes have passed in this movie. Oh,
and there's still 5 hours to go.
God. My God. I should say at this moment, I might have put on a couple college football games on my iPad underneath. So,
yeah,
like that right there. I may have it sketchy on the details because I might not have been fully watching.
I watched on Friday night. I think I was messaging you at the time. Yes, and I was lying on my sofa, you know, in my little living room. And it was so cozy. And I was like, oh, there's like 40 minutes to go. I can't keep my eyes open. And I was like, no, just keep going. You're going to hate yourself if you come to Sunday afternoon and you still have 40 minutes of this to watch.
Got to finish. No, I trucked through it after an all day of margarita seltzers and maybe two or three whiskeys during this. Yeah, Carly's the number one hype man I brought up. She has more confidence than himself. It's like, God damn, Sam, you a little bitch.
Yeah, I love Carly. I think
she's
great.
She's good. I thought Rosie Huntington-Whiteley was good.
Sam, I actually was surprised she didn't do more movies, but
I don't think she, I truly don't think she wanted to. I think it was an experience to do. She makes God knows how much money as a model.
Yeah, and I've actually been a big Rosie Huntington-Whiteley fan for a long, long time before this movie. And then this movie, I obviously love Transformers anyway. She has a whole beauty range by herself, like her own company, makeup, skincare. She did this whole thing with Marks and Spencer's, which is like a, I wouldn't say a home store, but it's like home clothes, you know, big department store. She had a whole range with them for years and she's just busy. So I'm not surprised she didn't do more acting, but she was actually pretty good.
Yeah, she was so much better than I thought. I thought she was going to be absolutely dreadful, but she... Yeah. I'm not going to say she's better than Megan Fox because Megan Fox just brought something different. It was different, obviously. But yeah. I think for what was asked of her, I thought she was good. This movie just is God fucking awful. And there was no no saving it by any means. John Malkovich couldn't save it. He could just bump it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. She replied to one of my DMs once and I won't. Really? I'll never forget it.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I think I took when she first brought out some of her makeup line. I used to post loads about beauty and makeup when I worked in that industry, which I don't anymore. But I took some really nice photographs of like her new blusher and stuff. And she replied being like, that's a really nice picture. And I was like,
please tell me you have that like saved.
I need to find it. Yeah, it was from my other Instagram account. So I'll go back and see if I can find it. It would have been like probably 10 years ago,
you have
at least.
To find that. You have to find that. Yeah, you have to.
I mean, we don't text back and forth, so if it's there, it's still going to be there.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. but people I would never actually want to hear of. Oh my God, Bill O'Reilly in Fox News, get in here as they're talking to John Turturro. What was his name again?
Simmons.
Again, everybody here. This cast is just getting way too big, and it's about to get even bigger. As we go.
Oh, yeah.
On.
This is because Sam and Carly get kicked out of Nest HQ, rightly so. And so Sam is like, oh, we're going to have to go and do our own research then. So he calls up the expert, Simmons, who has made his. Remember, he has this like weird addiction to the Transformers. And Sam calls him up and he's like, oh, I'm clean. Like, don't talk to me. Like, kind of makes fun of his addiction. And then he's like, talk to me.
Don't tempt my addiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. He shows up a little earlier in this. He showed up like well over an hour last time. In the second one, working at that his mom's like store somewhere in New York, like that meat shop. But I'm like, who else is going to show up? Alan Tudyk, not you.
Who's that?
That's his assistant.
Oh, Dutch.
You don't know this guy?
I recognized him, but I don't
know
him. I do.
K2SO, Rogue One. This is him. He's in everything. He is the new. He's in every Disney movie also. He'll do some kind of animal. He's like the new Frank Welker.
Well, yeah, I thought I recognize him, but I don't know why.
Firefly is a big one. Yeah. I know a lot of people recognize him from there. Death at a Funeral. He was in that one. He's but El Paso. He's a Texas boy, even though El Paso is like 10 hours from me. Still Texas is going to claim him.
Nice local man.
Yeah, he's great. This performance, however, have you ever seen the OG father? Well, actually, the OG Father of the Bride is like from the 60s. The Steve Martin Father of the Bride from like 1990.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it.
Anytime a gay, super effeminate, actually, I should say effeminate, super gay, like assistant shows up, Martin Short in there is playing like Frank. He's just doing this so much. Like, I can't even like Jesus in here. The wiener's Frank. He's doing this. And from the get go, I'm just like, oh, my God, like, what is this? And I looked up the trivia. Apparently, he played some character in a movie called 28 Days back in 2000, a German junkie, I guess. Mm-hmm. And this is what he is. And he's saying this is the same character. And he has a backstory, which eventually in that Russian fucking bar or whatever, when he goes John Wick.
Yeah,
that's where it came from. So I'm like, that makes sense, because that made no fucking sense while watching it.
It was so out of nowhere. And I love when we first get introduced to him. Simmons is being loud as always, and he's like, Dutch. And the camera's like, whoop. Do you notice that?
Oh, didn't they? They do a Dutch angle.
They hit us with a Dutch angle as it goes Dutch. And I was like, I see what you did there, Mr. Bay.
Okay, I'll give him that. I'll give Michael Bay that. That is clever and a very film nerd.
Yes.
Thing right there. Yeah. So again, by now I was like half conscious. Well, one eye on football, one eye on this movie, and then my hands on my whiskey bottle to get me through. Where are we at? John Malkovich shows up again. He starts like shadow boxing
Bumblebee
or something. This robot. He gets the F bomb of the movie. I hope that was in his contract.
Did he?
He just goes fucking awesome.
Oh yeah, of course. I have it written down.
Yeah.
Fucking awesome.
Fucking awesome.
That.
It's like, okay, there's the F-bomb.
Because
good
they
for you.
Try to sneak in another F-bomb later in the film. Do you know where it was?
No, but earlier, I always watched with the subtitles on.
Yeah.
And when Sam gets the medal from Obama when he's leaving.
Oh, he goes.
Yes. And I think because he mouthed it, but
that's
didn't
not
say
okay.
it,
yeah.
it doesn't count. Because the subtitle had it. And I was like, whoa. And I went back and looked. I'm like. Oh, he
no,
didn't
he's
say
like
it.
Mouthing it. Yeah, he's like whispering it. So I thought that one doesn't count. But later on, one of the mini Transformers says, "This is a cluster," and then
and
it
they
cuts
cut
off.
It. Yeah, yeah.
See, so I wasn't sure if that was Amazon Prime's version where they have to cut it out, or you know how I keep getting these like
no. From what I've always
versions,
seen,
but that must be it. Yeah.
No, unless it's changed in American movies, the MPAA, I think is what it is. You get one F-bomb. For a PG-13 movie, and it cannot be sexual. So you can be like, this is fucking awesome, but you can't be like, I'm gonna fuck you tonight. That would make it rated R because it's sexual.
Yes. But that's such a weird.
Don't take that. Don't isolate that audio out of context, everybody, please.
I'm gonna clip that.
They're gonna clip that.
I'm gonna make it something on my stream deck.
Yeah.
On one button.
It just randomly, wait, what'd he say? I'm gonna fuck you tonight. Whoa.
But I thought it was really good in the second movie. Their F-bomb was when Michaela thinks that Sam is dead and she goes, someone fucking do something. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's
like
serious
urgency.
Moment. Like it was, whoa, that one hit really hard. This one's just John Malkovich showing up to his apartment being like, that robot's fucking awesome.
Or it was in between takes. And John Malkovich saw something on the ceiling. It was just like, this is fucking awesome. And like, are we rolling on that?
Yes, sure.
Is his eye line level with the robot? Oh, sure. We'll adjust that in post. All right, there we go.
I love it.
Rosie shows up.
She's pissed.
Carly, sorry. I said Rosie. Carly. Well, I'm using all their names anyway. Carly shows up and she turns real quick from being supportive to now she's a mean bitch who doesn't want the guys to have any fun. I love how from the time she shows up to the time she leaves looking like a Victoria's Secret model going to a ball is all of maybe 6 minutes to get in that what I'm sure is a $20,000 dress and like $2,000 heels or something. She's walking in this dirty ass alleyway in that. I'm like, you need that pulled up right to your door. Like you can't really walk in this and then show up. You're going to smell like a goddamn New York City sewer.
I don't get the timings of all of this because you're right. She arrives home and then all of a sudden she's ready to go. And
her
I thought,
hair.
No.
Yeah. Her hair.
No. Yeah. She says she's going to this party. It's still like the middle of the day. And then there's a large chunk of the film where I'm like, is she at the party the whole time? Or where is she?
When they leave. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like it goes on for ages. or what feels like ages. There's a whole highway fight, all of that. And I'm like, wait, Rosie's still at the party. Like, this is a long thing. Or unless she went somewhere beforehand for maybe like pre-drinks or something.
Now, what could have happened, and we don't know exactly what it is, a lot of rich, super wealthy New York people will live in Connecticut. And so maybe it's like an hour or so drive.
Oh, maybe.
Out to Connecticut. Because I know a lot will do that. And they'll obviously be rich enough to have their own place in New York as well, like a penthouse. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them will commute from Connecticut because there's like Millionaires Row, and tax purposes especially.
That's probably it then.
Yeah. We're going to go with that. That's going to make sense. I do get the great line that when Simmons goes out there, it's like, oh, she left you, huh? The warrior's path is a solitary one. I'm like, yes. Yes, all single men. Now you have your own mantra to say.
Maybe, Carly, I was watching a review of this guy that I really like on YouTube, and he was like saying how he thinks Carly should not have been in the film at all.
I mean,
I like Carly. I was like, well, first of all, Michael Bay is not going to do a film with like a hot girl in it.
Yeah. He had to show up Megan Fox to be like, yeah, look who we're replacing you with.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and I'm sure you can do this with a lot of movies. You can take a character and be like, they had no reason to be there. And I mean, clearly she had no real reason to be there other than to have Sam, like to connect with an audience, to connect honestly with the girlfriend of the boyfriend that was dragged, or the girlfriend that was dragged here to the movie. Like, get that. But I mean, like I said, it's one thing if she was bad or detracted from the movie, but she definitely adds to it. Like John Malkovich, you could say, what do you need John Malkovich's character for? Of course you don't fucking need it. But
John Malkovich.
Yes, the supporting character adds to it.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I really liked her, but it just stood out to me that he was like, no, get her out of there. I don't want to see that. I was like, okay.
Yeah, like weird, people weird. We didn't need added. We'll get to Tyrese and Josh Duhamel. Oh, yeah. We don't need them in here, and I didn't want them back.
Eps.
Yeah. All right, I cannot wait to see these two cosmonauts and what stereotypes they have, because they're going to go find these Russian astronauts. Of course, they're in this seedy bar. And of course, there's a Russian model sitting next to him in a mink coat screaming.
There's too many scenes in this film of like people just showing old photographs and being like, this happened, this happened, and this
happened. Who is this? And I'm like, we got to go find them.
God, right, okay, and then we're going to meet these new guys, and they're old and also have some knowledge about the war, and it's like, here's some more photographs of the moon, this is what happened then, this is this person. I'm like, oh God, I didn't need this.
Yeah, so we'll probably never do the movie Rounder, so this is where a good thing I'll get to tell the story that I think I hinted at last week.
Yeah.
About John Malkovich and his Russian accent in Rounders.
Oh.
And I put the clip in Discord, and
we did.
When I did it last week, Matt Damon doing this accent was so much over the top. He's like, hey, that man, he's me on, he be at me. And he says he shows up on set and he's like, it took months for this to happen. Everyone was talking about, and again, this is a young Matt Damon. This is like 98. This might have been actually filmed before Good Will Hunting, before all of that, before he really blew up. And he's waiting. And he says they do that take. And everyone is like clapping. The crew is just clapping. He's like, oh my God. And Damon's sitting there going, what the hell is happening? And he said Malkovich caught wind that Damon's kind of confused. And he says, Malkovich leans in and goes, I'm a terrible actor. He says, I'm a terrible actor. And of course, he's like, you know, he's joking. He's a great actor. He goes, but that he realized it in that to kind of like cut the tension or whatever was brilliant.
Hey, that's so weird. I didn't watch that clip in case it was a spoiler or something, but is it just him talking about that?
Yeah, it's just a two to three minute clip of him giving that basic exact story right there. But yes, I'm telling you, I need to put a thing of his accent in Rounders, because that's not that exaggerated.
Yeah.
To get the audio cookie paid, that with the way he says, I can't say he beat me. I just have to go, he be at me. It's so insane, and it's right after Con Air. It's a year after Con. I think that movie was 98. I think that was 98. Okay, we look away, and I mentioned before I must have turned on another movie because Dutch goes all John Wick, and then we get to the line that offends me. If you're offended by all this, look, I can deal with racial stuff. I can deal with ethnic stuff. I'm joking about that. I'm just going to be like, wait, you can deal with that.
Wait, what?
But historical inaccuracy. Without it being a joke or without it being like done in this way, when they have the guns to it, I don't even remember who says it. I think it might have been John Turturro. He goes, "Everybody relax. World War II is over." And I'm like, oh my God, we were allies in World War II. The Russians, the Soviets, I should say, Soviets and Americans were allies. Lend lease. We gave a lot of shit to the Soviets, which is a big reason why if we'd have fought them in the Cold War, it would have been really funny. We helped prop them up as well as, you know, they took on the brunt of it. We were allies. I was about punched my screen and almost started writing a letter to the UIL about this.
Right to Michael Bay. Why did you do it?
To everybody to be like, hey, we were just like, what the hell? Why am I getting this email 12 years after the fact?
12 years later.
But that's what offended me in this movie.
Oh, man. I see. It went straight over my head.
All right. So we get this long-winded attack and some robots. I don't know what the hell is going on. But some of these Autobots, did he just slit that Decepticon's throat and he shot that other one like right in the face?
The highway fight?
Yes. At the end when they're like, drop the guns and then they still fight.
Holy shit. The highway fight to me is one of the things that I remember for so long, because this was one of the films that came out in 3D when 3D was still like kind of impressive. And there was this one scene in the highway fight, which is in slow motion. And there's like Sam is like flying through the sky. There's loads of debris. And I just remember being in the 3D cinema being like, whoa, this is awesome. But I love this scene because the Decepticons are terrifying. You know, the three black SUVs that roll up behind the white car that Simmons is in, and then they turn and they run like animals. It's so weird when they run like that, because I'm like, oh, it's not a robot. It's like an actual animal. And one of them has like dreadlocks, and it's just so
modeled
scary
after the
run.
Predator.
Yeah, modeled definitely. After the Predator. Definitely. And it's so, so good. One thing I know about this film, I don't know why I know it, because I haven't seen The Island. Have you seen The Island?
I've heard of it.
Okay, so it's a Michael Bay film from 2005. And they use some of the highway scenes in this film are reused shots from The Island. And everybody was up in arms about this when it happened, because they were like, why would Michael Bay do this? And the reason they did it is because there was this accident on the set of filming the highway fight. And an extra got paralyzed from this accident. So basically like, what's it called? A cable, like a tow cable on a car snapped and gave this woman such a bad head injury that she was paralyzed. So they didn't obviously want to use the footage from any of that day filming. So he reused stuff from The Island. But when it's quite cool seeing comparisons from The Island, which is a vastly different film, to Transformers, because in The Island, it's just a big car crash. And in Transformers, they've made, obviously, the robots come in and knock the cars over. And it's loads of people have done side by sides on YouTube. It's quite cool to watch. But obviously, horrific incident that led to that. And I think there's some documentaries and stuff about that as well.
Wow. So all eight people who saw The Island noticed that? No, I'm sure that movie did very well. I have heard that movie is insane.
I have no idea.
No, it's the beach that's insane. I always get those two movies confused.
Yeah, one of them name.
Is okay. One of I think it's the beach that's like nuts.
Yeah, is that with Leonardo
DiCaprio?
That's DiCaprio.
Yeah, yeah. Ewan McGregor's The Island, right?
Maybe.
Who could know? Oh, you haven't seen it either, I guess.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
just
a
that one
movie
scene
we haven't seen.
Yeah, let's do it.
We have to do it. All right, I look at the time right now, and we're going to blitz through this. Goddamn, we're going to go. But quick, wait, Sentinel's an op? And holy shit, he just blows Ironhide's fucking head off.
Yeah, that breaks my heart even to this day. To this day,
yeah, I
can't watch it.
I was stunned.
Because Ironhide has his big moment just before that in the Mexican standoff, kills those two dudes, has his big moment, class dismissed. I was like, yeah, Ironhide! And then, Sentinel exposes his true intentions and kills him in cold blood. And what really does it for me is the sad bumblebee noises.
Yes, and oh my God.
Sad
and then
bumblebee, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, and then later I was thinking, are they going to kill Bumblebee? But I know they didn't, because I know he has his own movie later on.
Is he not in like the number 4 and 5 with
I haven't
Marky
seen
Mark?
I haven't seen enough of them, at least I don't
maybe
remember.
Maybe not then. Yeah, I don't remember either.
No, well, yeah, he obviously doesn't die in this one. Spoiler for like 30 minutes from now.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, let's get through. Let's go here. The parents show up. And again, it was funny. This is where I had the, what I wrote down is, you're not going to get a third one.
Yeah. And then his mom asks him if he has a big dick.
I had already howled and scream laughed enough that I couldn't do it again. That I just did the eyes turn like, wait, who? How? Who's a wuzza? Yeah. Get this boomer, happy wife, happy life shit out of here. It's goddamn 2011. But I guess there's always room for boomer humor. And then Sentinel meets up with Megatron. They start putting their plan together. Sentinel, I don't know if it was Megatron or Sentinel. I don't remember this. It might have been Sentinel. One of them goes to the Lincoln Memorial, does their best John Wilkes Booth impression.
Megatron
does his John Wilkes Booth impression and blows away Abraham Lincoln. It's like, this movie is out of control.
And then he sits on the chair.
And he sits on it like as if Abraham Lincoln was a king and this was a throne. Like, the insanity is really going up a notch here.
Yeah, this is when all the Decepticons start to arrive, right?
Yes, it is. And we get, and I promise it's the last time I'll mention it, but we get a total capitalist moment here. And I love this part because it goes into that movie that could have been where Dylan, a human, is actually working with, and he's in cahoots. With the Decepticons. And I'm like, yes, this is exactly what would happen, because it's exactly what happens in fascist countries, and it's what would happen in the U.S. if it continues like that. Your corporate owner class overlords will always side with the people that are going to take over within here, the literal, like, what's going to be slave masters, and he knows about it, which, again, okay, that's the last time I was going to mention capitalists. They're perfect because slavery is the epitome of capitalism, like literally free labor. And like, this is exactly what would happen. In this dumb movie, it's showing reality that the owner class would fully sell out humanity and everybody else for safety and to make money.
Yes. And he says it a few times, like, they're going to spare me. And it's actually really similar. I was doing some editing of my Mass Effect playthrough. I know you haven't played Mass Effect, but there's one person in Mass Effect who sells out to they're called the Reapers. And he's like, yeah, but they're going to spare me if I do this for them. And then I'm like, okay, you're fucking Patrick Dempsey.
it's that meme, the leopards eating face party. Well, they're not going to eat my face.
You know, I don't know that one.
That's one that people do with, largely it to me comes from, like, it was always something like with the Nazis, and it's a big thing with what happened with Trump and the Republicans here is they're not going to do that to me. Oh, they're not going to eat me. They're going to eat those people. And it's like, well, it's only a matter of time.
Yes. They'll do them first and then they'll come for you. Yeah.
All right. This Mercedes, this whole time, this $200,000 Mercedes gift was a goddamn robot.
Obviously. Yeah, it had to be.
I didn't think that as obvious when it happened. I was like, oh shit, that makes sense now, but I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, no, when it first happens, you're like, oh god, obviously, because as soon as he talks about being in a cahoots with the Decepticons, as soon as you see her driving out in the car, I was just like, oh no. And it's,
they
quite
got away
sinister,
too easy.
Quite sinister. Oh, when, like, when it starts crawling into her, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't like that.
Yeah, it got really weird, like in a creepy, in
dark.
That sense. Yes. So when I had this down, I had, the robots are here for resources, and I typed out, that is so fucking stupid, as the resource of this planet are on so many other uninhibited planets across this galaxy and other ones. But later on, they flipped it on me and they actually had a new thing where the resource is the 6 billion strong slave labor. I was like, movie, stop being smarter than you are. Stop making me think and be like, hey, there's actually interesting concepts in this third Transformers movie.
I liked it as well because they didn't tell Patrick Dempsey that. He thought that they were all going to go away. Like, they told him that he was going to.
No, he knew. Oh, yes. They told him about the slave labor. No, he knew
about
it.
Yeah, they didn't tell him that they were bringing their whole planet here.
Yeah.
Because Rosie is the one that goes, well, we can't go to their planet. Well, how can we go to their planet? Like, we were, you know, sensibly enough from her. And then all of a sudden you see Cybertron coming through and you're like, oh, it's coming here. Right. Brilliant. Yeah. I don't know how that would work, to be honest.
It's like it would destroy it. Yeah. I don't know. This was before Avengers. This was a year before Avengers. This is a pre-Avengers world where we have cities being destroyed, Man of Steel, and all that would take from it. Okay, so I have stuff down here, but there's not much here for the rest of this whole fucking movie. There's still a goddamn hour left. There is a Scottish robot, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Wreckers.
Is that what they are? He's just saying, yeah, you got pulling that, you Nancy Wenka. You are ridiculous. And it's so brilliant. I looked up. I couldn't find it. Graham McTavish is listed in the Transformers voices, but I don't think it was in this. I couldn't find him in this movie. I didn't want to look ahead unless he's really super old from like the 80s and did it there. I was like, please tell me this is him because he's coming to Dallas.
Yeah, I'll you got to go. Here.
I think I do have to.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, it'll be a pain to get over to that part of Dallas in the middle of the day. But from the time I get out of school to the time he's done there, it's 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go get some pictures, get something in there and just maybe beat him down for about 7 seconds.
Ask him if he was in Dark of the Moon.
I got Uncharted, where he does a very like London accent. He's Charlie Cutter. Yeah, Charlie Cutter. And then obviously House of the Dragon. And then
is he in Witcher?
Yeah, he's Dijkstra.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, he's Dijkstra. And then he's an Outlander. I've never seen that, but that's a big one too that a lot of people will know him from. Okay, I have Hello Tyrese. The last thing that I really want to make sure I get in. This space shuttle explosion, when it looks like the Autobots are leaving and it gets blown up by, I think it's Starscream. This space shuttle explosion looks just, it reminds me of the Challenger and the Columbia disasters.
Yeah.
And it's way too close to home on those. I don't want to think about those.
I don't really know what that is. Is it when
Challenger was a big one?
Failed launch.
Yeah. In 1986 was a launch and it was so big because they had a teacher on board. And it was the first civilian to ever go in and it blew up. And it was one of those things where just it seems like everybody who was at school at that time was like, yeah, they wheeled in a TV so everybody could watch it.
Aww.
So everybody was exposed to this space shuttle blowing up. And then Columbia was 2003. And that one would always stick out to me because it exploded on reentry over Louisiana and Texas. And so we heard it that morning. We heard a boom. And we're like, what was that? I don't know. Maybe it was a transformer or something like that. And it was weird because I actually went to the 6th floor depository, the Kennedy Museum that day. That's all I always remember that day.
Oh, wow.
And then we start hearing about, it blew up. And then all of that debris went like all over Texas. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it within like 50 to 60 miles from here. I think Stephenville or something like that.
Scary.
Like had a lot of it. And so, it was nuts. And also there was somebody that went to UTA, the school I went to, University of Texas Arlington, who was on that space shuttle and who has a dorm named after her right across from the arena that I was at for 5 years every day.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's kind of, it's awful. And you're right. That is very much what this is like, though, because they get blown up right in the sky.
The look over of everything. It, too, was just like, can we just have an explosion like it was the Death Star or something?
Yeah.
It's too real.
Really fantastical, yeah.
Yeah,
But they weren't in there.
They weren't. They weren't in there. They fooled me. They pulled a goddamn, and I only know this because it's about where I turned off that movie, Rise of Skywalker, when Chewie's ship was apparently blown up. And I was like, wow, there's no way. And they did. I was like, turning the shit off.
Yeah,
but they didn't. All right.
That was one of my saddest lines of the film, though, when Sam's obviously being manipulated into trying to get information from the Autobots. And he says to Optimus Prime, like, what's the plan? What's the plan? And Optimus Prime says, there is no plan. This is it. I was like, whoa.
I know. It
broke my heart a little bit.
Maybe it was the third whiskey and the eighth drink of the day. But when they did that, and Sam just like, okay, what are we going to do? What's the plan? Like, he knows he's in a movie or a game. And he's like, all right, what's the next step? And like, no, your people
there
have
no
spoke.
Plan.
They've spoken. Yeah. It's freedom. You have the freedom to choose. Democracy. And
psych, we're coming back.
And then, I know. And then he walks away, and then they look at B, and they go, and I'm just like, okay, again, this feels like, and you knew it wasn't going to last. Of course it wasn't going to last, but it's like, damn, if they actually went this route, this would feel like it would hold weight after the fact.
It hits me because when Shia LaBeouf starts to cry and he like leans down over the bench whenever Bumblebee walks away. My heart aches a little bit when I see that bit.
And then
but there is no plan is the line.
Yeah.
And sad Bumblebee noises. I don't want to hear
them. I know.
Them.
He's like a puppy. And then how about when he was about to get executed and they actually.
Oh, no. And he sees Sam.
Bro, when they like give him sad puppy dog eyes, I'm like, no. You can't do that.
No. I just want to see it.
You can see the gun like heating up behind him, and then he's just looking in his droopy eyes. I'm like, this movie needs to stop. Stop doing this right now. Don't make me tear up, god damn it.
I know, it's horrible. It's so bad because they kill this random
Q. Like,
is that Q?
Yes,
this is
he's an old fucking dude. Executed.
Why is there this old robot? Where does he come from, first of all? Why is
he's
he
the,
old and English? Yeah, and he gives him loads of stuff, and then he gets executed.
But you get it? The inventor named Q?
What's that from?
James Bond.
Oh, I thought that, yeah.
And Q. When that happened, I was like, all right, fuck this thing. And all my notes are like bagging on Q. And then he gets straight up Battlefield executed. And I put in there, oh, wow, my bad. Sorry, Q.
Sorry, Q.
Sorry, Q. I won't talk. I was like, but you're right. Like, holy shit. Now, granted, the problem with that is we don't feel for that robot. Like, Ironhide was a big one. Ironhide was like, whoa, shit.
Ironhide was a big one, yeah.
You really want us to feel something, fucking blow B's head off. No, for real. Like,
do that. This actually gets really dark. I think we said, I don't know if this was earlier in the recording or before recording. This is so dark, and this is the most we see humans just getting slaughtered.
Oh my god,
there's people being
vaporized.
Yeah, vaporized. Literally, they're running, screaming. Everything is so horrific. And even like the Autobots are not being as careful as they used to be because they're plowing through buildings as well and just tearing shit up. So this is definitely the most human, even after like Revenge of the Fallen, when so many people die in that city, there's no chance. They definitely can't cover the shit up. So many people are being slaughtered in this city. It's horrific.
Yeah, when they come back, it's right when Optimus comes back, when they announce it and they save them after the vapor, you know, vaporizing. Yeah. He comes back and he challenges his inner Benjamin Netanyahu and says, "We will kill them all."
It's like, yeah, we're not playing fun anymore. We're gonna slaughter them all.
Yeah, there you go.
What?
Is inner? I had on there. I was like, should I put inner Israeli prime minister or Benjamin Netanyahu? Will people get it? So I'll just do both in there. And again, years from now, people are like, wait, what was going on? Oh, shit, that was going on right at that time. So yeah, he channels that. And
that was my other hoorah moment when he goes, we'll take the battle to them. I was like,
yeah! Battle to them. And by them, I mean everybody. Let me introduce you to this term called collateral damage. So this is also a movie about revenge. Because initially, he wasn't going to kill Megatron and them. He was going to send them back to Cybertron. Because at the end, we'll go back some other things in there. But at the end, when this Megatron, he kills Megatron, like rips out his spine. And then Sentinel's like, Optimus, my brother, you have to understand why I betrayed you. He's like, you betrayed yourself. And like cocks the shotgun and fucking blows him to holy hell. I was like, damn, this shit's about revenge.
No second chances with Optimus.
No, he was cutting all loose ends. Closing off? Tying off loose ends. There you go.
No more sequels.
He knew he was in a trilogy. He's like, no more. Everything's here. If I come back, I'm coming back with a guy from South Boston acting like a Texan with an Irish boyfriend, with a daughter with an Irish boyfriend.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be. Only then. Then he sees the script. God damn it. I'm back. All right. I'm pretty much done talking about this shit. It's a couple things. One is the big time product placement close up of Bushmills whiskey.
What? How did I miss that?
It was a zoom in. I think it was right as the building was about to fall when the heavyset ranger was about to shoot the rocket. They zoom in to like stuff shaking and it's a bottle of Bushmills. I'm like, how? Michael Bay has to be an investor in Bushmills for that to get in there.
That's brilliant. I totally miss that.
Yeah. I've never had that Irish whiskey. I've missed it on there.
Neither have I. No, I must have done.
All right. Turturro mentions getting a drone to Trump Tower. I'm like, hell yeah, let's get a drone down there. Wrap that
shit up. Let's get another president. Yeah, let's get another president. He wouldn't have been president at that time.
Well, let's go ahead and take him out before the fact, even though I wouldn't be shocked if Michael Bay voted for Trump. Although I think he'd be in there. Yeah. Octoon capitalism, the 6 billion slaves. I'm pretty much over this shit.
One of my favorite moments that I have watched time and time again is when Sam saves Carly, because Rosie Huntington-Whiteley fucking kills it.
Okay.
I think she's great. There's a moment where she thinks Sam has died, and that's probably one of the most genuine, like, heartfelt screams. Like, no, it doesn't. It's not, you know, sometimes I think, no, like a Darth Vader kind of no.
Yes.
Hers was really, really good. And I believed every second of it. And then it turns out Sam's there to save her. And bless those two, must have had such sore throats by the end of filming this, because all they're doing is screaming, Sam, Carly. And then she hits the bodyguard and runs and jumps and she gets out. And I was like, yes, I love Rosie Huntington-Whiteley so much. This was my top moment for her. Apart from the moment where she calls Megatron a bitch.
There it is.
That's the best moment.
You'll always
ever
be his bitch. Oh. Okay.
Go on, Carly.
Always be sitting those bitch. No, yes, because when it came down to that, she was great screaming. I do think that'd be really hard when it's not actually happening to do that. And Shia LaBeouf is so good. And he did it again in here on the highway scene where he gets thrown through the air screaming and he kind of wraps him back up. He plays like the terror screaming so well. And he's done that across all three movies. He may have personal problems in that sense. I swear I will get on this and I will take it. And I'll be wrong until I guess he dies. He will 100%. I will bet anything on this. He will be nominated for an Academy Award somewhere down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And I will bet that he will actually win it. Because
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, he's a damn good actor. And Hollywood loves a redemption story.
They do. They do. I really have been meaning to watch him on John Berthnell's podcast because I've seen loads of clips of it. And he seems like a really, I think he's got his head screwed on now. Obviously, everyone knows he went through loads of horrible shit, but I think he's on the right path now.
Yeah,
but you're absolutely right.
I think I remember a couple months ago seeing something. No. Nothing that bad, but more or less like he had an episode of something. I know.
Oh, I hope he's all right.
I think it is. I think he's just, he's a weird cat. Like, even if he was sober and to begin with. And so it's like it's always on the edge, but I don't know.
He's got that child star background as well, because he's been in it since he was like very young teenager. Yep.
I remember when it was that Project Greenlight was a thing. You know, he was Disney Channel, I think, too, right? Even Stevens or something.
Yeah.
And then Holes was a big thing that got him up there. But you had that Battle of Shaker Heights. I think it was like the first thing I'd ever heard of him on from that Project Greenlight, something like that. All right. Anything else from this? The only thing I have is we talked about the abrupt ending where it was, you know, the whiplash.
God.
So I went back and looked from the time of Sentinel's death. So the time that Sentinel gets his head blown off and his eyes go out to the actual credits is 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
That is insane. It felt like about 10 seconds.
Yes, it did. It really now. Yes, because they do it and they get the rings and ha ha ha. And Rosie loves this car. And we always have a voiceover at the beginning with the voiceover at the end. So I'm like settled in, like, here we go. It's about to be a 45 second to 1 minute monologue about freedom and we'll always be here. Now he wraps that shit up in about 10 seconds. And
he's
we
like,
hear
no
this.
More sequels.
Is this Linkin Park again?
Probably. Yeah, probably.
I'm sure it's Linkin Park again, but it's 2011 Linkin Park. Fart rock hits and I'm done.
I really thought we were going to get, you know, they do quite a lot of post-credit scenes where they wrap up like Mom and Dad. Where was Mom and Dad? There was no post-credit scenes for Mom and Dad this time. And I really thought we were going to get like, oh, Sam and Carly settled in their new home and they've got Bumblebee on the driveway or stuff like that. But yeah, we have this like 45 minute to an hour epic battle scene, which is what everybody kind of wants from Transformers films. It's just absolutely insane fireworks everywhere. And then 10 seconds is what it felt like. And the credits are rolling. The lights are coming on. I'm like, whoa, what the fuck just happened?
Whoa, is it time to go? Yeah. Yeah, you're in the parking lot already before you realize.
Like, whoa.
No, I did not want it to go on that long, but that is going to be it. Yeah. That is it. Transformers Dark of the Moon from 2011. Let's get to our D&D classes that we always get to. We decided to have Sam, Carly, Optimus, and Sentinel. There's a lot of other ones in there, but we don't know. Stick it to about four. That should be it. So the first one we have on here is Sam Witwicky, who we had down as a sorcerer, spellcaster, maybe not that, draws on inherent magic from a gift or bloodline. Obviously, the Witwicky bloodline gets tied into it there, and his primary ability is charisma. And for him to bag these two women, come on, dude. Guys, charismatic for days.
He must be casting
spells. We talked about how much we liked him, and their constitution is also like the saving throw. And because he's been thrown around and beaten to shit, how he's not dead by now is amazing. So Sam Witwicky, sorcerer.
Yeah, he actually is kind of insane in this last battle scene. There's a part where he just starts running over cars, like parkour, like leaping over cars, sliding under them. And I'm like, what the fuck? This guy was, I don't know, like at the start of the film, he couldn't find a job. And now he's like leaping over cars, like some kind of circus performer.
Got that bloodline. All right. What about Carly?
So Carly, we have down as a monk, which is listed as a master of martial arts. Maybe not so much, but the main thing we're looking at is harnessing the power of the body and physical and spiritual perfection, which she obviously is. Rosie Huntington-Whiteley is a supermodel of our time. And even through fighting pretty much the robot apocalypse of the world, she looks 10 out of 10 the whole way through.
Yeah, primary ability there, dexterity and wisdom. Smart in that
she
sense.
She is smart, yeah. And she's a good, again, quite charismatic. She is able to hold her ground in conversations and is always hyping up Sam.
The hype man, number one hype man.
Yeah.
All right, next up, we have Optimus Prime. And Optimus we have as a wizard, scholarly magic user capable of manipulating the structures of reality. Boom. Ooh. Right there.
Kind of perfect, really. And who's the last one? Sentinel.
Okay.
Yeah, Sentinel we have down as a warlock. So it's kind of, to me, a little bit more of an evil wizard, a wielder of magic that is derived from a bargain with an extra planar entity.
There it is.
So he's got this bargain going on with the bad side, essentially, with the Decepticons, with Megatron, for the higher worth.
Yeah, made the bargain with the Decepticons, and he got. All right, there are the D&D classes. Now we get to the tier ranking. S at the top, then A, B, C, D. I will go first, give you a little bit more time to select yours. This movie is dreck. This movie's bad. It's a tough watch. When comparing them to other Transformers, the second one I remember saying was not the worst, but I think the wildest, the craziest one or something like that. The odd, I don't know. I'm losing my mind again from watching, having to talk about these damn movies, but this is not quite so bad. It's fun to keep going. The second one would be that case.
Okay.
But it's also has John Malkovich in it, and John Malkovich is great. And has just a bit enough of that Michael Bayism and that to make it somewhat in there. So it's going to go solidly into my C tier.
I get that. I was expecting a D from you, so I'm happy with
D's
that.
D's going to have to be, wait till January when I know one movie we're going to pick is going to be in there. D is to where, again, I know we say this a lot, it's to where it's not, there's no redeeming qualities of it. It's not a fun bad watch. It's not one you can have drinks. Like, this is one that if I had to watch it again, I'd pour more drinks, make fun of it and be enjoyed, but I would never, ever, 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 ever put this on myself again.
Yeah. I think with me, I would never sit down to watch this film because it's too long and it's not good enough to be that long. Yeah. It's so long. It's just, I'm a 2 hour kind of gal. 1 hour 50 is perfect. But I've always loved this film. It's very nostalgic to me. And I enjoy the action side of things. Like, if I don't, like on Friday night when I had nothing to do, I very happily just could sit and watch action films. I'm not too invested. I love the addition of Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, and I enjoy it, but I would never sit and think, oh, I'm going to watch Transformers Dark of the Moon tonight because it's just too much. For me, it's a B.
Okay, but why would you watch this when you could just watch the first one again?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
If you're going to watch Transformers, like it's
you'd watch
better
the first one.
Outside of it not having John Malkovich, it's better in every way. All right, so there's the tier ranking and the classes. Let us know what you think. Again, contact us, podonthepath@gmail.com. The Patreon link below, Discord link below, all that in there. Get in that Discord. Tell us what to do. Lucy, where can we find you?
You'll find me at Lucy J. Robin on any social media. Make sure you follow my Twitch if you want to get notifications when our special stream goes live in a couple of weeks' time or a week time.
Yeah, make sure to check that a couple weeks from when we're actually recording this, which makes me call it the November 18th. Remember the 18th of November. All right, you can find me on Discord mainly there. Next week is that a Mockingjay I hear?
Ooh.
It's the Hunger Games.
Yay! So we got the new Hunger Games coming out in the cinema next Friday. So I don't think you've seen the Hunger Games, have you?
I have. I've seen them all.
You have? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you hadn't for some reason. Okay, we've both seen the first one then, at least, yeah.
Yeah, I remember liking it. I remember actually liking the first one. As they go on, the second one I think was okay, but I remember the first one having a very much indie, low-budget feel to it.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah. I really like the first one and the last one, because the last one is just crazy.
All right, but we'll get to the first one. Next week, we'll depress everybody with children killing children. We'll
see you next week.
See you then. Bye.